Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on family matters. Mask, mothers and fathers align saving kids. Kids of all ages and all stages for any mental health issue, including addictions. Our confidential number is 718-758-0400. Maybe it's for yourself, a neighbor, a loved one. Maybe it's for someone you sit next to in shul. Write down our number, give it to them, slip it under their door, offer it to your local rabbi to help a family. Everyone knows, unfortunately, today a family that needs help with their child, their married kid, their young kid, their elementary age kid, their high school kid. Maybe it's for yourself or your spouse. Please jot down our number. Again, it's anonymous. You can call in, describe a situation, and it's all confidential, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Our number is 718-758-0400. Don't wait until it's a huge problem out of control. So tonight we have with us a very dear colleague, a friend, both him and his wife, Dr. Sylvan Schaefer. I'd like to welcome you this evening. How are you?
Baruch Hashem. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for being on and making the time. I know it's a very busy season for you now after the school is over. You know, this is your busy season. Actually, all year probably is your busy season. But Dr. Sylvan Schaefer has a Ph.D. in clinical psychology. Dr. Schaefer is a former director of forensic psychiatry program in Long Island Jewish Medical Center and North Shore University Hospital. He's affiliated with Hofstra Medical School and NYU Medical School and is a graduate of Columbia Law School. Dr. Schaefer is the director of quality evaluations and consulting services, which does evaluations and therapy in about 30 languages. Is that right, Dr. Schaefer?
Yes, it is.
Right. And he has authored numerous articles and book chapters on the interaction of psychology, law, halacha, and maintains a psychotherapist practice in Manhattan and Queens. So, Dr. Schaefer, we're having you on this evening to talk about psychological testing. And the reason that I say to my listeners that it's a busy season is that so many families have gotten notified by the schools that their child needs evaluation, some testing, and they use the summertime to have that done so they can start out on the right foot in September. So, Dr. Schaefer, let's tell our listeners, what is psychological testing, please?
Well, first of all, let me thank you, Rahama, for inviting me, and let me thank you for what you do with MASK. It's hard to believe that you are a one-person force of nature and institution. You do so much for everyone. It's hard to even measure what you do. And
I am not a one person. I must interrupt and tell you I have an amazing staff. We have Ahava and Dini and Maria and Ruth and another Dini and Michael and others that I'm raising. So we have a staff here. I'm just the one that tries and gets to oil all the wheels. But thank you.
You are the nuclear reactor that powers the rest of the ship.
Thank you. Okay, what's psychological testing?
Okay, psychological testing is many different things, and I'll try to go over it briefly where you would use them and why. The first and most important thing to know about it is it's an attempt to make sure that the evaluation of the person, either an adult or a child, mostly it's done with children, you know, numerically, is objectively assessed and scientifically assessed. Too often we try to subjectively say the child is smart, he's not smart, he's a genius, he's not a genius. We can't leave children wide open that way. We need to know exactly where they stand vis-a-vis the rest of their class and the rest of the statistical norms. And the testing allows us to do that. Too often we try to do this subjectively. And the example I like to give is when someone says, does my child have temperature? I'll kiss them on the forehead and see if they have temperature. That is very subjective, and I don't think any medical office would accept that as the measure. It's much too sensitive. We need to know exactly what the temperature really is. 2 or 3 degrees makes a big difference. The same is true for psychological testing. There is the average. There's a bell curve, and most of the children will be in the average area. But at the extreme ends of that curve, you have the children who are gifted. And by the way, testing is also designed to find the gifted child who needs special attention and is often ignored. And at the other end of the scale are the children who are below average, and we need to provide services for them as well. The testing tells us where they are on this continuum, and will also break down what the strengths and weaknesses are. In other words, it measures two types of things. A child isn't only advanced or only behind. There may be different skills that are advanced and others that are below average, and we need to find out where those are, and that's what the tests do. The standardized tests are in some way similar to what you hear about with the SATs and the PSATs, meaning they are developed by companies that standardize them on hundreds and thousands of children to make sure they can see different populations and to see where the averages are among a normal sample of children that includes many, many different groups. And those tests are re-standardized every few years. And they try to examine if there are any biases in the tests and to eliminate them so that we have accurate measures of where a child or an adult stands. The tests are broken up into several different types of tests. The ones that we're probably most familiar with, particularly for children in schools, are the intelligence tests. Those are sometimes called the IQ tests, but they measure the cognitive ability of a child. Another type of test is the emotional test. That is not related as much to the intelligence, but tells us whether the child has any emotional issues that could be affecting behavior or affect learning. Another group of tests are called educational tests. Those are related to cognitive ability, but they focus more on what was taught in school, for example. So while the general IQ type test is native intelligence, what we have internally, the educational tests also measure what we have been learning in school and what we've mastered and what we haven't mastered. For those who have language problems, we also have what's called nonverbal tests. Those are tests that don't rely on language, but rely on skills, such as putting together a puzzle or being able to pick out things from a design that are either correct or incorrect. So we help control for verbal ability, and if there is no verbal ability, we have the nonverbal tests that also measure these skills. Some of the tests are also computer-based, so we use computers to assess the skills. So, for example, for testing attention deficit disorder, we have tests on the computers and on paper that measure how a child has mastered attention and concentration. And finally, the testing can be done in many different languages. Part of what we always take into account is bilingual background. This particularly can occur in our community, where we have children who are native speakers in Hebrew, or Yiddish, or Iranian, or Russian. So for the yeshiva community, there are children who come from families where English is not their primary language or not their original language or not spoken as much in the home. And we want to be able to control for that, to make sure that it's not the secondary bilingual quality that is affecting the scores, but their actual ability. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about bilingualism later. That's for schools mostly. The other areas where you have psychological testing would be, for example, in courts for custody cases to see how the parents are functioning, or what the impact is on the children, so that the evaluator and the court can make a recommendation for custody. Another area would be on competency cases to see whether somebody is able to take care of themselves or needs someone to support them. Immigration cases are important. I'm sure people have heard about the use of psychological tests in criminal cases, such as for an insanity defense or a competency hearing. So those are other settings that you would use psychological testing. And finally, in regular psychotherapy and counseling, many times the counselor will want to know what the diagnosis is of the patient that he or she is treating. So they will have psychological testing to help them focus the counseling and the therapy. So those would be the various areas besides schools that testing would be used.
And what are the various settings in which psychological testing is used?
Okay. I mentioned those settings, for example, the classroom, the courthouse,
competency. You would go, quality eval would go to someone's home.
Well, you mean physically setting. The
right.
Testing can be done in the home, it can be done in our offices, and it can be done in schools. It varies, depending on, for example, what the facilities are in the school. Some schools don't have a quiet place for doing the testing. Therefore, it might be done in the home, or it might be in the evaluator's private office, because we want to make sure that the student has a quiet, distraction-free environment. So that would control where the evaluation takes place. We always try for a quiet place.
Right, and generally testing is a minimum of how many hours or a maximum?
Okay, that varies by the number of tests that we're trying to do. So for a standard psychoeducational test, it might run 2 or 3 hours. If you're doing what's called a neuropsychological evaluation, which is more complex and is going deeper into the issues, assesses the more neurological components of learning, those tests can take 6, 7, or more hours. It also varies by the ability of the child. Some children work quickly, some children work more slowly. So we tailor it to the ability of the child. So they wouldn't sit for 8 hours. We might meet for several hours, several different times, because it's hard for children to sit that long. So you would have multiple sessions of testing, for example, in a neuropsychological evaluation.
You know, you talk about ADHD, for instance, and today's days, I mean, there's so much trauma that we're being made aware of that's happened to some of these young adults that their parents may have not even been aware of so many years. And they ran around and took them for evaluations, et cetera, because they're told your child can't focus in class. And meanwhile, years later, we're finding out they may have been molested, and other situations that may have occurred, and that's why they couldn't focus. So when a school says to a parent, you know, your child needs an evaluation, can you give me common reasons that they need to be tested, not the reason of a child that may have gotten molested, and parents don't even know about it, but just common reasons for testing?
Okay. So, firstly, you're asking a very good question about how do we tease out the difference between what could be ADHD or could be resulting from trauma. That's why we have multiple layers of testing that I described before. We have a cognitive layer, we have an attentional layer, and we have an emotional layer. So we're measuring each of these possibilities. And by the way, you can have more than one thing occurring at a time. You can have trauma issues, and you can have ADHD. So that's why we have multiple tests that tap into different reasons that a child might be having a problem. Now, why might a school make a recommendation for testing? Well, first of all, it's always helpful if the school psychologist contacts us, and of course we only would speak to anyone with consent of the parents, but it is very useful when we can work with the school to find out what's going on in the classroom. So if there's a social worker or a school psychologist or a teacher that is willing to share with us, or we're willing to give us the report cards, then we can help focus what the questions are. But most commonly, most of the questions that we get from schools are related to learning issues, that the child is not performing in their classroom appropriately and on grade level, and behavioral problems, that they're acting out in the classroom. Now, learning issues and behavioral issues are very closely related. If a child has a learning disability and cannot keep up with a class, they may tune out and start acting out behaviorally. The reverse is also true. If there's a behavioral issue, they can't then focus academically, and it might affect their ability to function in the classroom on learning issues. So we always take a look at both of those to see which might be affecting the other. But they're very closely related, and that's what the schools usually make the referral for. One of the things we do say is we always ask the parents and the schools to try to do this as early as possible. Meaning, it's very sad when you have a 7th or 8th grader coming in who's had problems throughout school, and they're starting to do the evaluation that late. First of all, they've missed out on many years of possible remediation and treatment. Secondly, it means that they've lost out in school, and they've been identified as some kind of a problem student. Now, that can also have an emotional impact. If you hear over and over that you're not a good student, you begin to internalize that, and that's not healthy for the child. So what we say is if the school is seeing something early on, it's best to locate the source of that problem and begin the remediation early on so that the child can begin to function in the school as they are in the early grades. And, of course, these things are available. You have early intervention. Then the layer above that, from 3 to 5, you have the CPSE level, the 3 to 5 preschool level assessment, and then you have levels for school age. So the parents should have the ability to get that child evaluated as soon as somebody is identifying a problem and not to wait. Sometimes they will hear from professionals, don't worry, he or she will grow out of it. Sometimes that happens. But if they're not growing out of it, it's best to find out what's wrong. You don't want to let that problem fester and grow and create its own problem where a child feels turned off by school. So early identification and intervention is essential, whether it's emotional or cognitive. We always want the child to receive some kind of services and intervention early in their school history rather than waiting for when there's a major problem later on. And, of course, you have children who eventually may end up going off the derech, and you wonder, where did that come from? You don't see the problem early on, then you can't identify it, and then it becomes harder and harder to treat. The younger the child, the easier it is to do an intervention, and the more effective the intervention.
Dr. Schaefer, I'm wondering, there are, you know, some misconceptions about, you know, parents and schools, you know, about psychological tests. I'm wondering, what could be some of the common misconceptions, whether it's from the parents' angle or the school's angle, like, what could be some of the resistance?
Okay. There's two different kinds of misconceptions. One is that I'm going to go in, get tested, and get an IQ score, and that will be sufficient. That once I know the IQ, I know my child. An IQ is actually a rather minor point in the process and may even be deceptive. It doesn't reflect the emotional side of the problem, and it also is only an average. The test taps into many, many different types of skills which are essential to know about. One is cognitive ability. such as comprehension, math, vocabulary, visual, spatial skills. Then there are learning issues such as dyslexia. Then there's attention and concentration problems. Very little of that has to do with IQ. And even on an IQ score, it's an average of subtests that measure different things. So, for example, a child may do wonderfully and very far above average on vocabulary, which is one of the subtests, but do very poorly on mathematics. Put those two scores together and you've got an average score. But it's misleading because the child is failing in math and doing beautifully in vocabulary. So we want to know what the subtest scores are that measure the abilities. We don't want just a summary, and parents are deceived by that number of the IQ. The other one, which is sometimes very sad in our community, is that there's a stigma and a fear of tests and of potential diagnosis. There's a fear that somehow if the child gets a score that is not perfect or above average, then somehow that will affect their view of them, could affect shidduchim. What happens then is they avoid, it's like not going to the dentist for a cavity. If you wait and wait and wait, the cavity only grows and gets worse. So by being afraid of the diagnosis and the outcome, they actually can let it fester and get worse. What's important to note, and parents should keep in mind, that the psychological results are confidential. They make the decision about whether to disclose them to anyone or not. This is not put on the internet, and it's not in Facebook. It only will rest between the parent and the psychologist unless the parent gives consent to release the results to someone else, which is usually in most cases going to be the school. And even in most schools, they will hopefully keep all of this confidential. So that is one fear, and it's one that in our community we tend to have a lot of stigma attached to that, and then people wait. So it's best to keep the confidentiality, but find out what the child's true ability is, and most of that can be protected. Another misconception is that anybody can buy a test and administer it. That's not true. First of all, it should be administered by a licensed professional, and it's easy to find out whether a psychologist or a social worker or a mental health counselor are licensed. That is on the state education department's website. They list every licensed professional, and it's free, and it just, I think it's nysed.gov, and they can look up any professional and see whether they carry a state license. That's the minimum requirement they should have, and then, of course, they should know something about psychological testing. It shouldn't be left just to anybody to do. The other important point to get to is what should you get out of a psychological test? A, there should be a report. The parent will usually get a written report that will show the strengths and weaknesses in various sectors. There should be an analysis of these, but also, very important, there should be a section on recommendations. The psychologist will write up at the end of the report what the recommendations are for the child. Now, it might be a referral to another professional, such as a speech therapist. It might be a recommendation for remediation. It might be a recommendation about what level of class they should be in, advanced class, medium class. It also could be recommendations in the classroom, such as with students who have attention deficit problems, sometimes they will recommend seating them in the front of the room so they will have fewer distractions and the teacher can keep an eye on them. They may recommend coaching by other students in the classroom who remind them, you know, to do various tasks. They may remind them to bring home the books for homework. And finally, and this is very important, there may be a recommendation of accommodations, which means that they might get extra time on tests, in the classroom, they may get a tutor, they may get special time on the SATs. So accommodations to meet a disability are an important part of the recommendations. So that should be at the end of the report so the parent can know where they should go next with that. I also mentioned bilingualism. Very important There are many people in our community who come from homes where English is not the main language or wasn't the language of the parents, and we may need to make sure that those factors don't skew the effects inappropriately, meaning someone can have a wonderful IQ, but if they don't speak much English at home, there may be a deficit in the vocabulary section. And we need to know about that, because it's not because they can't learn vocabulary. They may not learn the English vocabulary. So testing can be done in another language. So we can test in Hebrew, in Yiddish, in Russian, in Persian. We do in Chinese and Indian languages. So we try to make sure that we don't have factors, cultural factors, disturbing the results that we're trying to get. And that's taken into account because New York has many, many different cultures and languages, and we try to make sure that the testing reflects those issues without skewing the results.
Very important information, very clear. Dr. Schaefer, one last question. Males, female therapists that do the evaluations, you can have a male to male, female to female. You have availability, correct?
If right. If a parent makes a request and says, my son would be more comfortable with a male evaluator, or a female student is more comfortable with a female evaluator, we make every effort to accommodate that request. Because, again, we don't want outside factors affecting the scores. So we try to make sure the child is comfortable with the evaluator, and we also try to do it, for example, we'll do it in the morning. We don't like to do testing late at night when the child is falling asleep. So we take environmental and cultural factors into account when we do an evaluation.
Okay. I want to thank you for being on tonight, and I just want our listeners to know that we have done by Quality Eval close to 100 evaluations several years ago on at-risk youth. And if parents, teenagers, if parents would have taken the suggestion from the teachers when they were younger to have them evaluated, possibly we could have then had less troubles with them all through their school year. So please take it serious what Dr. Schaefer explained. Have the evaluations done as early in elementary school or earlier as possible. If you had one done in first, second, third grade, and you may need another one done in seventh, eighth, ninth, have it redone. Dr. Schaefer, thank you for calling in tonight. Thank you for always being there. Also for the call, always lovely, available, both you and Marcy. So thank you so much for being on with us tonight.
Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for all the work that you do for the community.
Thank you. And I would like to wish everybody... Oh, sorry. I'd like to just mention anyone that wants to reach Dr. Schaefer, feel free to call MASC 718-758-0400. I'd like to wish everyone a wonderful evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. Thank you, and have a good night.